This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I'm Lisa Wysocki from Ashland City, Tennessee.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Norman, Oklahoma. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August 14th, episode 2247. And it's brought to you by horselovers.com. Good morning, horse world.
It's Wednesday. Today is Wednesday.
He's a very mixed up horse.
Authorization acknowledged.
You know what they say about Wednesday.
Yabba-dabba-doo!
Have a good Wednesday. Thanks.
And coming up on today's The Boss is Away, So the Horse Gals Will Play episode, we're going to stop and visit with Jessica Isbrecht, whose name I'm sure I butchered. She's been on before. She's taking the cross-country ride and climb adventure that we all want to do. So she's going to give us the latest from the middle of the country. And we're going to hear from Dr. Jenny Johnson. She's going to talk about what we should expect from a pre-purchase exam. And just to keep it exciting, it's apparent that Jamie has an existential crisis coming up.
It's not really a crisis. It's a question. And I was like, I have an existential question for these ladies. And then I was like, am I using the word existential correctly? So I went and I got the definition of existential. And here's the definition on dictionary.com for existential. Relating to existence. So I think every question we could possibly ask is an existential question for anybody ever.
True.
So I just have a question for y'all. We'll get to it. But first, let's get rid of some daily whinnies.
So my daily whinny goes to Mike and Arlene Glavis. So yesterday in Tennessee, we had this huge storm come through. It's one of like our daily storms at this point, but our internet has not been the same. So Mike and Arlene are good friends. They live about a stone's throw from Ashland City right here in Pleasant View, Tennessee. And so I am scarfing up their internet this morning, and I arrive promptly at 8 o'clock to set up, and I'm offered coffee, and I'm offered a peach smoothie, and internet access, and a desk, and the whole thing. And so
you live in large.
Yeah, I mean that's true friends. How many people can you call and say, "Can I come over and use your internet?" Like
yeah,
now,
probably not many. Well, and they serve you food and smoothies and coffee. So
I mean, know,
win-win.
I know. Yes. I mean, it can't get any better than that.
So. I mean, come on. Sounds good. Well, tell them thank you for letting you come over and hang out with me for a little bit. Well, my daily whinny goes out to the the Jockey Club's 67th Annual Roundtable Conference on Matters Pertaining to Racing. It brought several hundred industry leaders together this past weekend, and they basically put a spotlight on the crisis that the sport is facing. And the speaker was William M. Lear Jr. He's the vice chairman of the Jockey Club. And he expressed in his talk that thoroughbred racing is facing a situation that, quote, threatens the very existence of the sport, which we have talked about. They are screwing themselves over with all this. And he says they're facing a threat. And if that response to the threat is or appears to be business as usual, we're going to lose. It's like finally somebody is saying the right things. He says we will have no chance fending off the same people that did away with the circus, dog racing, because if their sights on us next, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Amen, brother. So here's what one of his suggestions, actually, the Jockey Club chairman, Stuart S. Janney III, they are he announced that the organization, the Jockey Club, is backing a recommendation to eliminate the use of whips during races. Let me say that again. Eliminate the use of whips during races. They did have a caveat, except when needed for safety. They don't create safety. They create hazard. Yeah. But
how can that be? How could that be?
You got to just to hit, you know, Mike Smith in the face when he tries to pass you. Is that the use of safety
issue?
That's the safety issue. Other than that, you can't hit a horse. You can only hit other people.
You know, I think it's just amazing that they're finally getting some support for this.
Yes, it is. Well, I mean, it's not even support. I'm sure there's not support for it, but tough. It's the dang Jockey Club that's coming out with it. And that's what's great is it wasn't like, you know, me over here on this stupid radio show saying they need to get rid of whips. It was like actually the Jockey Club. It's like they've been listening to the show. And but they also talked about needing uniform standards for medications on a national level. And the other thing that they talked about, which I thought was awesome, is like, hey, we all know bad people in this sport and we need to get rid of them. They need to go. And so I thought that was fantastic. Like just addressing the bad people, the bad medication and the use of whips. Like I feel like maybe it's going to make a turn. So I'm really excited for the future of horse racing. Speaking of awesome horsemanship and horses and decisions and things that have happened in the news, congratulations to Lisa, Mr. Yep. Robert Long from Wyoming, 70 years old, and just won the freaking Mongol Derby. Congratulations to Robert Long. USA! USA!
Fabulous. Fabulous.
Have we checked his birth certificate to make sure he's really 70?
I have not.
Many of us watched him through this whole thing. I mean, it was just absolutely amazing. It's just amazing.
You know what? There is nothing more fun than getting on the Twitter Mongol Derby on your main computer because the videos just play on your home computer and watching these people go through this. I mean, it's just got like I feel for Leslie Wiley. I know why she has PTSD. It's because seriously, like the crap they have to deal with. Oh. I'm watching them like try to mount horses that are just flipping over to get them off. I'm watching them just gallop along fields, which looks fun until you realize there's like marmot holes everywhere. People there's a picture of somebody just flat getting stepped on while they're underneath the hind end of the horse and pictures of falling off. It's just utter craziness.
And then Jamie, there is the food. How can you possibly experience all that and have this, I don't even know you call it food to sustain you with?
You know what? If I went into the Mongol Derby, I'd just go out and graze with the ponies. That's about all I can eat out there. Yeah. Vegetarians will not have, I mean, it's just not, you know, it's, what do they eat? Like goat brain? I mean, horses?
But even like the unpasteurized mare's milk, you know, which our stomachs are just not used to. I don't think I could digest that.
No.
I mean, I'm almost vegetarian, but I don't think I could do that. But it's kudos amazing. To those who can.
I mean, they dealt with like heat and rain and hail and just utter craziness.
Yeah.
These people. And then for the winner to be number one American from Wyoming. And then he's 70 years old. Get out.
Yeah. No. And I think it just goes to show that, you know, you no matter what your age is, you can go after it. You can go do it. Doesn't matter how old you are. This guy just proves it.
Never stop. And it just seemed like everybody was cheering for him.
Oh,
everybody.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
Yeah,
so congratulations.
He needs to be on the show.
I do have to ask you guys that question that I talked about. Ooh. And when I said existential, like more like you have to reflect on yourself and think about what you would do. What would you do if I handed you $2.1 million? $2.1 million and I gave it to you. What would you do with it? This is so easy.
Well, number one, I'm just amazed that you can say existential this early in the morning because that's It's really tough.
It's even earlier for me, so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, almost everybody knows I run a nonprofit called Colby's Army, and so I have this already spent. So it would
you
it
actually
would,
you have a business just plan already your debt. In place.
Oh, I do. Yeah, I mean, we would retire the debt. We'd build an indoor arena. We'd cover the round pen. We'd fence in more pasture. We'd fix the driveway. I mean, all of that. All of
That's
that.
Good. That's yeah. good.
And then
That's
with the good, 99 yeah. cents you had left, you'd buy yourself a Coke.
There you go.
They're like $2.50 in Coke machines now, just so you know. So you're yeah. screwed.
I'd have to split it with somebody.
She might have to get the generic Coke.
Yeah.
The house
yeah. Jen, what would you do with $2.1 million?
Do I have to spend it all?
What are you going to put it in savings, you nerd? Come on, spend it. It's free.
I would buy myself a lot of land. Yeah.
Okay.
I'd be putting it in real estate.
You'd buy a new farm in Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have to have neighbors.
She'd become a recluse.
And I get a separate plot on the other side of the street just for Glenn. See, he doesn't listen to the show, so I can say
that's
that.
Your house, baby. This is my house.
His has
go
good
home.
Internet. Mine has none.
Yeah. Oh, good point. Yours has Netflix though. Okay. So if
How
I had $2.1 million, I would not live in Oklahoma. I would probably find a farm somewhere else with a covered or indoor arena that is really nice and big and a big outdoor arena. $2.1 million can buy you some nice stuff for in a lot of places. Now it's not going to get you that much in California or, you know, down in Wellington, but $2.1 million do you something really nice around the country.
So
and what?
Why the point one? Not that I'm not going to take it. I mean,
actually, I wasn't even getting that specific. It's actually 2,171,250. And actually, it's in pounds. And that's what somebody spent on a painting. They just bought a painting for $2.1 million. That's right. The piece was among several by Munnings to feature in the sale. It was the painting called The Bramham Moorhounds at Weeding Wynn. And it was at Christie's in London recently. And it is a hunt print. And I mean, it's really, you know, lovely. And it's got a white horse in the front and two, like a bay horse and a chestnut. And then all the hounds are in the front. It's really cool. It is not $2.1 million cool. Because I could come up with something a lot cooler to do with $2.1. Now, other pieces did sell. And, I mean, it was really sad. Like the other ones only sold for like 225,000 pounds. You know, it just like
sad.
That's pretty lame.
Yeah.
Another actually, money's sold for 162,000. So yeah, boring.
Yeah, that's chump
peanuts.
Change.
Chump change.
Yeah, but you know the $71,000 makes a big difference in your question now because then I would actually then buy a new truck and I could probably buy a Coke.
You could get that. You could get the whole dang Coke machine.
I could get the Coke machine. Yep.
Congratulations. Yeah. I mean, I just can't imagine. I mean, maybe it's an investment. I don't, there's really no reason. That's why it became existential because I'm like, the theory of existence is like at stake here. Like, what would you do relating to figuring out why or when or how, or let's move past it. Yeah. My brain hurts trying to think about it. Hey, I do have some good news and then we'll move on to a list that Jen's going to read us. Jen, you asked me this morning before the show about our house and if it's being built and they're currently pouring the concrete.
Oh my goodness.
Ding, 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 ding.
We had a little concrete slab ribbon around it and then they put some pipes in for plumbing I guess and like little things for electric stuff and vents and all this stuff under the floor and then they put sand into it and then they put plastic on it. So I've been like every day and as of right now they are pouring concrete on top of that, so I'm going to have a garage floor of concrete. The whole thing is going to be concrete. It's going to be like officially moving forward. I'm excited. Like, I feel like it'll get real when they start actually framing the walls. But,
yeah, but even with the concrete slab, you can see it's there. I mean, there, that just has to be so cool.
It's not going anywhere. It's there. And yeah. Lucas is currently out there putting his handprints in the garage. So it's like, put his handprints in it. I wanted to walk a horse across it, but Chad said no. It's so cool. Like, handprints across your garage or like across your house. That'd be nice. Yeah. Apparently not. But yeah, so it's moving forward. And it's funny. I ran to the bathroom earlier and Jen's like, God, you're the fastest peer ever. And I'm like, it's literally like 6 feet behind me. Like, yeah. There's nowhere. I live in a cracker box. So I am ready to move past it. Make this a bunkhouse so all of you guys can come and stay with me and we'll do some horse training together. And yeah, I'm excited. So soon as this house is dang well finished, y'all can start coming to visit. Okay. Okay. Perfect. Okay. Because right now, there's nowhere to stay. Like, I had friends come this summer, and I was like, y'all need to get an Airbnb.
So your house is tiny. It's like 900 square feet or something. How many bedrooms and bathrooms did they squeeze into that 900 square feet?
So when you walk in to the front door, which I don't know you're at the front door because there's zero windows in the front of the house. Zero. You cannot see out the front of the house. So you're sitting in the living room. There's fireplace in front of you. That's it. And that's like a living room kitchen. And on the right, you go down the hall and there's a tiny master bedroom. And there's another bedroom, which is the one I'm sitting in right now because it is 6x8.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Wow.
This tiny. Is like a cinder block home that somebody built by hand. 70 years ago. Yeah. I mean, the guy like built it himself. So, I'm just glad to be here. Let's just go with that.
Yeah. And so how big is the new house?
Bigger. To where you can walk next to each other without turning sideways and shimmying across, like, you know, like moving side by, you can actually like walk side by side. I don't know the exact square footage, but a hell of a lot bigger than 800.
Yeah. You know, I live in a 244 square foot shed. I live in a tiny house.
Do you feel okay. like a schmuck now, Jamie?
No, because she doesn't have a child and a husband exactly. and four dogs living with her.
Okay? Exactly. I have a tiny dog in my tiny house and that's it. But I am building a shipping container home, but we're still in permit stages.
Okay, I got to hear a lot more about that when that happens. That's awesome.
I'm fascinated with those things.
You know what? I was like, we're going to do a shipping container underground for the horses and like put it underground. And then when the tornadoes come, I'll have the shipping container. Yeah, it sounds great. Hold on, I'll get to it. And you take the horses down and they're underneath a buried shipping container. Here's what happens. The walls collapse inward when you're in there as the ground moves and everything. Apparently, you can like the thing can collapse in on you while you're in there. And I was like,
oh,
nope,
not good.
I'm done. Nope. Dream averted. Never going to happen. That's terrifying. Yeah. If you don't flood out first. So if you don't drown,
there is that. There is that.
Squishes you. So good times.
Horror film, Jamie. Good golly.
This is the hell I'm living in, Jen. Okay. Thank you.
Well, let's move on to some more practical and lighthearted topics.
Mine's practical. It's just not lighthearted. You
it's
go
not
though.
Not even a little bit. God, I could have nightmares about that. My hands are sweating.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. No.
That'll wake you up.
We have a little list for our Wednesday. And we're going to get to our list for Wednesday after we hear from Jessica Isbrecht, one of our listeners, who's going to tell us a little bit more about her cross-country trip riding and climbing.
We all get in a rut when it comes to shopping for horse supplies online. If you have not tried horselovers.com yet, then you are missing out on one of the world's largest online tack shops and all the best brands like Noble Outfitters, Ariat, Turn 2, Tough One, Professional's Choice, Weaver, and many, many more. Visit horselovers.com every day to see their daily deals and flash sales. Horselovers.com has everything for the Western and trail rider. So get on over to horselovers.com today and save.
Oh, well, Jessica, how are... You're in California. You were just in Wyoming like 5 minutes ago.
I'm in California now, so I'm on Pacific time zone.
Oh.
And had to wake up early, and the people camping next to us were up until 4 a.m. So
oh, no.
That might be why I don't sound so enthusiastic.
I'm
I'll work on that.
How's your summer been?
It's been awesome, but a whirlwind. Like, I was taking notes about all of the places we've been to prepare for this because I feel like I might forget them. We've been so many places since I talked to you last.
So do tell. Read the list.
All right. Well, last time we spoke, I was literally driving from Arizona to Utah. So mm-hmm. that was in April. So we spent pretty much all of April in southern Utah. We started in a place called Perea, which is in like the southeast near the border with Arizona and Lake Powell. People might be familiar with that. And let me tell you, it was freaking amazing. The most beautiful place I have ever ridden. Just so different and cool and spectacular. So like that area of Utah has like sandstone rock formations, and it's known as the Grand Staircase. And there are tons of flat canyons, which are these very narrow, very tall canyons.
Wow.
That dead end at one end. So we got to ride through all of these amazing landscapes with like gray and pink and white striped rocks, and then into these slot canyons. And it was just amazing, absolutely amazing. I highly recommend everybody load their horse up and drive to Perea, Utah.
Now, are there actual horse trails there, or did you just kind of find someplace to ride?
So there are national forests with trails and, you know, like parks with designated trails, but a lot of it is just BLM land that's all open. And sometimes if it's a popular place, like around, Perea River Ranch is where we camped, they have a lot of trails that people have ridden out from camp. So you can find your way around on something that's already packed down and visible. Otherwise, if you feel adventurous, and it's very easy to do so because you can see forever. It's not like there's trees or anything blocking your way. You just kind of look at a mountain or a cliff or a canyon in the distance and you ride towards it.
That's
everything
amazing.
Is open. So we got to do some really, really cool stuff. Like,
I mean, you're basically, yeah, the Grand Staircase, Escalante National Forest and recreation areas all around you. Perea is spelled P-A-R-I-A. And if you're looking at Utah, it is the southern central part of it is where this is. And you're right. That's like where John Wayne filmed all his movies. You know, like southern Utah is just the most spectacular place in, I think, in the world. And that whole like area of Four Corners just east of that to Colorado and everything is, that was a great place to be. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a place called the Old Perea Town Site, which is like a river valley with a canyon, and it's an old settlement from the 1800s that was a mining and cattle ranching operation. But it got washed away during a really big flood. And that actual site and area somehow became a movie set. So you drive down into this area, you park your trailer, you tack up your horses, and then you ride through all of these landscapes that were used in tons of old Western movies.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool.
Now I'm also looking around what's around Perea because it sounds amazing to go there. And did you get to climb Molly's nipple? Did you see Molly's nipple?
Many nipples and many boobs in my day. Men seem to like naming mountains and rock climbs after women's anatomy. But I didn't do that one.
It is literally a little mountain called Molly's Nipple. And it's appropriately named, to be fair. I don't know who Molly is, but it looks like a nipple. Oh my gosh, that's fantastic. Well, cool. Is it so that's highly, by the way, Lisa, Jessica's more of a ask for forgiveness, not permission type of rider. You know what I mean? Like, she just kind of gets out there and does it and waits for somebody to, I think, yell at her.
Love it. But just great. Think of all the experiences you would have not had if you had asked for permission first.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. What do I need to ask permission for? This is the Wild West. I can do what I want.
Yeah, you can do what you want. Just don't shoot anybody and you'll be fine. Yeah. That's cool. And so then Bryce Canyon kind of up above that. And did you head that way next?
We wanted to. So if you bring private horses into the national park, you need to make a reservation with the park staff. So I went ahead and I did that for early May. And then there was the Strangles outbreak. And they shut the park down to private horses. So unfortunately, we didn't get to ride there. But we did go to Zion and Mount Carmel. And I did an endurance ride up in the mountains, kind of like looking into Zion National Park. We drove the horses in the trailer through Zion National Park. We climbed Angel's Landing and we did a bunch of rock climbing there, too. And that was awesome.
So do you find
there?
Oh, I was just going to ask, do you find that your horse, can you tell if he or she has a preference for a specific landscape? Like, I used to ride this horse who loved climbing up and down in the woods, but wasn't so, you know, excited about open fields.
I've noticed that my Cleveland Bay Thoroughbred mare, the one that I brought from New Jersey, mm-hmm. seems to be really enamored with the desert and wide open spaces. Probably because she's lived her whole life in the trees.
Yeah.
And, like, closed in and not really able to see very far. And I don't know. I feel like maybe that's an instinctual thing for horses to want to see everything around them. And, you know, when we first got to the desert last October, I caught her watching the sunset.
Oh, how cool.
Like, she just looks at everything and loves it. And the only time she gets nervous, like, at night when we're camping is when we're closed, like, enclosed by a bunch of trees. And I talked about this on one of the other shows last year, how we had been in New Hampshire and she was living alone at that point because we didn't have the other horse. And I think we had bear or moose coming by the campground at night.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very dense pine trees. And I would wake up hearing her trotting in circles and snorting warnings. So I don't think she likes being enclosed by trees.
Got it.
By herself too, probably. Yeah, that wasn't awesome.
Yeah, that doesn't help. That doesn't help. We haven't had like any issues like that where she's scared at night. Recently, or over the course of this trip until just recently, when we were in Idaho, we were camped like up on the mountains in some pine trees. And just one night I heard her running in circles and snorting. And I went outside to check and scanned with a flashlight through the woods and couldn't see anything. But the only predator in that desert like area, are mountain lions. So I have a feeling something was creeping around out there.
Here, kitty. Come on, baby. Oh, my gosh. That's amazing. Oh. So take us up to Wyoming. How was that? We got to speed it up a little bit. We can do this in two parts, too, if you like. But you went to Wyoming and you hung out with Mary, who is a person I've met up in Wyoming a few times. It's just the most beautiful place, I think, in the world.
Yeah, we were coming through Wyoming via Moab and then South Dakota, and we went into the Tetons and the Jackson area, and God, that was stunning. Mosquitoes were horrible, so
really?
Don't go there in June or early July. but it was really cool because I reached out to Mary Schmidt, and told her we were good. Going to be there, and that I really wanted to meet her and possibly ride. So she ended up squeezing me into her schedule, and we met up at a trailhead that looks over like the Grand Teton and a lake and everything, and actually saw a grizzly bear as we were hauling the horses to the trailhead. So that was pretty exciting. So we met up with her and her friend Wendy, and I got to meet Sunny, her adorable puppy. And we went out for a really awesome, like, 13-mile ride. We stopped for lunch on this wildflower-covered hill going down to a lake. And it was spectacular. And she is such a nice lady and so much fun to hang out with and talk to. She surprised us when we got back to the trailers. She broke out margaritas and sangria and a bunch of appetizers and snacks. And we had a really nice time hanging out all afternoon.
Okay, I'm calling BS. I've seen Mary twice up there. I've never got any of that treatment.
Well, apparently I'm more of a celebrity than you are.
I guess. I mean, my gosh, you are super famous traveling around the world, basically doing what all of us wish we could do. Now, remind everybody how you're able to do this again.
Well, Byron, my partner, works full-time for a software company, so he's able to keep his day job, and we have steady income that way. And then we also develop apps on the side. So the primary app business that we work on is digital guidebooks for rock climbing areas. And then about 5 years ago, when I was a farmer in New Jersey, I developed a record-keeping app for organic farmers. And we ended up just selling that recently to a tech company. So we're pretty excited about that.
Gosh, congratulations. Cool. That's super cool. Oh, my gosh. So where are you now? And we'll be able to catch up with you from today up until the next time we talk to you. So where are you now?
Right now we're in South Lake Tahoe, and we're camping up in the mountains at about 7,600 feet. So it's 35 degrees out, and pretty chilly in the morning, but really nice during the day. And we did a spectacular ride up onto the Pacific Crest Trail. And like the peaks and the mountains out here are just gorgeous. And we're rock climbing around the lake and hanging out and doing all kinds of stuff. And this weekend, I'm going to go over to Tevis, which is only about 2.5 hours away, and crew for a rider there. And then I'm going to do some more endurance rides in California. And we're just going to hang out in California for the next 6 months and
that's
over the winter.
That's fantastic. Well, you're in South Lake Tahoe. You can pop over to Carson City, which is probably like 15 minutes from you or something. And that's where I got Zeus and Thor. Both came from the Carson City prison. So they've got a ton of Mustangs over there for adoption if you have one more slot in your trailer.
Unfortunately, I only have a 2-horse. I wish I could get a Mustang, though. It's on the list for the future.
It's probably for the best, anyway. Well, listen, thank you so much for catching up with us. I just listened to your stories all day. So please keep us informed. I love seeing your travels on Facebook. Tell everybody where they can kind of follow along with your adventure.
It's called Ride Climb. So that's my tag for everything. Facebook is Ride Climb, Instagram is Ride Climb, and then we also have a blog that I don't update as often as I should, that is rideclimb.com.
Go to bed, young lady. Your neighbors were up partying until 4 in the morning. You know what you should do is just walk out there and start banging on pots and pans.
I know, right?
Time for the parade. All right, Jessica, take care. Thanks for checking in.
Thank you. Have a good day, guys.
You too. Bye-bye. Well, that is so exciting. I feel like we need to have a song in her honor. What do you have for us, Jen?
As is my habit, it's going to be Templeton Thompson, this time Girls and Horses. And we're going to get right to that after this from Ovation Riding. Horse people know that they can count on Ovation's value, quality, and style when it comes to hard-wearing schooling attire, affordable show gear for horse and rider, or top-of-the-line equipment for riders at every level. From breeches to bridle work, saddles to stock ties, helmets to half chaps, Ovation is the premier brand of riding apparel and equipment for you and your horse in the United States, outfitting riders at every level from head to toe. Ask for Ovation brand riding helmets, breeches, and footwear at your local tack store, or go online to ovationriding.com and see the fantastic variety of quality, fashion-forward, affordable products from Ovation. ovationriding.com.
She talks about him, dreams about him, thinks about him all the time. She's got to have him, be lost without him. You can see it in her eyes. What is it? What is it with girls and horses? She says, now when I was a young girl, they were my whole world. They were my one safe place. Now that I'm older, still lean on their shoulders. I still feel like that girl some days. What is it? What is it with girls? And I dream about him. I live to love him, and I love to ride. I'll always have him, be lost without him. There's magic in those gentle eyes. What is it? What is it with girls and horses? What is it? What is it with girls and horses? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Girls and horses.
Well, a little while ago, Jen did an interview with Dr. Jenny Johnson on what to expect from a pre-purchase exam. It was on Horse Tip Daily, and I wanted to revisit it. So let's take a listen.
I want to talk a little bit today about the pre-purchase exam and what it is and what to expect from the exam. I think that hopefully most of us recognize the importance of having a pre-purchase exam done before we purchase a horse. And a pre-purchase exam is simply a complete examination of the horse prior to the purchase. No matter what the price of the horse is, it's always best to arm yourself with information. There really is no perfect horse, and there's always going to be various findings on a physical exam that a veterinarian will come across. But with that information, a potential purchaser can make an informed decision as to whether the horse is suitable or serviceable, really, for their intended use. I think with any pre-purchase exam, there are going to be many variations in the exact exam, and there's going to be different degrees of involvement. There really is no standard pre-purchase exam. It has to be tailored to suit each individual situation. For example, you're going to have a significantly different pre-purchase exam on a horse that you're looking at as a trail horse versus the horse that you might be looking at as a Grand Prix jumper. So I think it's important that before any of this, before the veterinarian is even called, you need to identify clearly in your own mind as the purchaser what the intended use for the horse is, and is the horse serviceable for that use. I think one thing that's important to discuss a little bit is how the terminology has changed over the years. I think many years ago we used to talk about, oh, the horse passed the vet or the horse failed the vet. We've really tried to move far away from that terminology and more towards is the horse serviceable? Not as, you know, we don't pass or fail horses. We don't say they're sound or unsound. But is the horse serviceable for the intended use? And that brings a completely different picture to the pre-purchase exam. Another issue that's involved in purchasing a horse is suitability. And suitability, when I say suitability, I mean, is the horse appropriate for the rider? Does the horse have the right temperament to do the job that you're looking at it for? And those sorts of issues are really not in the realm of the veterinarian's expertise. The suitability issues should be directed or considered more by the trainer rather than the veterinarian. I think it is important to have a veterinarian who's experienced and familiar with the particular discipline of the intended use of the horse. For example, if you're purchasing a Grand Prix jumper, I think it's important to have a veterinarian that's familiar with Grand Prix jumpers versus if you're purchasing a Western performance horse, for example, you would want a veterinarian that's experienced in Western performance horses. They have different types of injuries, different types of wear and tear, and a familiarity with those circumstances is essential in being able to evaluate whether the horse is serviceable for the intended use. And if your usual veterinarian is not particularly familiar with the given discipline that you're looking at, then your veterinarian can generally recommend someone who is. Doing a pre-purchase exam has several phases to it, usually about three phases that are important in the exam, the whole process. The first phase of the pre-purchase evaluation is what I'll refer to as discovery. And what this refers to is learning all of the particulars about the horse that you can, learning the particulars of the buyer, the seller, the history of the horse, what the horse has been doing, exercise-wise, training-wise, dietary-wise, hopefully complete disclosure by the seller of any medical and surgical history, as well as the showing history. All of this information put together is very helpful to the veterinarian in terms of evaluating the physical exam findings. And it helps the veterinarian to come to a conclusion as to whether the horse is serviceable for the intended use that the buyer is hoping to use the horse for. The second phase of the evaluation is the exam itself. And during the exam, it's best if the buyer and the seller can both be present. This makes the exam process go much easier typically because the seller is there to answer questions about the horse should they arise, and the buyer is there to discuss any potential abnormal findings that are found during the exam. And that way, difficulties can be frequently resolved immediately rather than having to wait until later and going over them over the phone with either buyer or seller. Obviously, that's not always possible, but if it is possible for them both to be present, that's preferable, and potentially, if not present at site, perhaps present by telephone during the time of the exam. For the exam itself, the horse is usually looked at first at rest in the stall. The veterinarian can evaluate the horse for behavior problems, just behavior of the horse in the stall, can sometimes pick up some clues about the horse's comfort level just walking around in the stall. Then the horse will be brought out, and the veterinarian would perform a complete physical exam of all the body systems and then move on towards the orthopedic exam. And that, of course, includes palpation of all of the limbs and then moving into the flexion tests. Many times now we've gone to actually videotaping the flexion tests during the pre-purchase exam, and that serves a number of purposes, but it's very nice to have that information documented, and it serves to protect both the buyer and the seller, and it's a reference point that all can refer back to after the exam. After the flexion tests are done, but before the horse is observed under saddle, it would be the time that any blood work to be drawn would be taken. Typically, blood work might include a complete blood count, a chemistry screen, a Coggins test, and potentially pre-purchase drug screens. I think the pre-purchase drug screens, certainly in the horses that are showing and or more expensive horses, I think they're an excellent idea. I think it serves to protect both the buyer and the seller, and it just makes it clear, you know, if the horse has been receiving any medication. And typically, I will advise the sellers, of course, to make sure that the horse hasn't had any medication for probably a minimum of 4 to 5 days before the examination. But there certainly are medications that can be picked up much longer than that. And so those findings have to be interpreted along with the history that was obtained of the horse during the discovery phase of the evaluation. After the blood work is drawn, the horse is typically observed under saddle. It's nice to see the horse doing the job that they're intended for, just for the veterinarian to have a sense of the comfort level of the horse doing the job and soundness-wise doing that job. After the horse has been observed under saddle, there'll be a re-exam of the cardiovascular and respiratory systems, evaluate how the horse has handled the exercise, and then many times a re-evaluation of the orthopedic exam, repeat the flexion test. And frequently it's very interesting to evaluate the difference of the pre-exercise and post-exercise flexion tests. It's important to evaluate, did the test change significantly? Did the horse improve or did the horse worsen on those tests? After all of this examination is completed, would be the time when any ancillary testing is done, and those might include radiographs, endoscopy of the upper airway, ultrasound potentially of any lower limb issues or any lumps or bumps elsewhere that might be of concern to the veterinarian. In some cases, in some of the more expensive horses, there are cases where horses have actually been had a bone scan or nuclear scintigraphy done to evaluate for any particular areas of inflammation or increased bone turnover in the horse. That would probably be the exception rather than the rule, but certainly is out there. After the physical exam and the discovery phases, we move into the discussion phase where the veterinarian discusses with both the buyer and the seller and potentially the buyer's agent, the seller's agent, all of the findings that were obtained during the exam. And that's the time when the buyer can potentially ask questions, hopefully it could be answered by the seller. And then from there, there'll be generated a written report that will detail all of the veterinarian's findings. And, you know, at that point, the decision is made generally, the veterinarian and the potential buyer in discussion will determine whether they feel the findings are consistent with the capability of the horse to be serviceable for the intended use. Now, I will talk a little bit, just very briefly, about the information and who has access to it. Typically, when a veterinarian is working on a horse, that information is subject to the patient-client privacy standards. In the pre-exam, it's considered that things are available both to the buyer and to the seller, and that's probably one of the few times potentially on different sides that will have access to that information. However, the radiographs and the ultrasound or endoscopy results are essentially the privilege of the buyer, and you would not be providing the seller with copies of that information or copies of the radiographs unless the buyer so authorized. And that way, the seller is protected, the buyer is protected, and the privacy standards are adhered to. And in cases, sometimes in cases where a buyer doesn't purchase a horse or it's not suitable for that buyer, there may be other buyers that potentially are available for whom it would be suitable. And in that case, there can be certain individual arrangements where the second buyer in line may have access to that information through an arrangement with the first potential buyer. I think overall the goal of the pre-purchase exam is to identify the status of the horse. Is the horse comfortable for what the intended purpose is and for the length of time that the potential buyer would like to use the horse for, and then the suitability issues are frequently addressed by the trainer.
Sounds good. Now, you're going to try to see how straightforward an answer you can get from Lisa and I. Is that right?
Yes, we are. I'm going to discuss 6 truths about towing a horse trailer. This is compliments of horse and hound. And towing horse trailers comes with a unique set of issues. There are universal truths. And we're going to see if there are any existential questions to be answered.
It's in existence. It therefore is.
There it is. The length of time it takes you to hitch up your vehicle is directly proportional to the number of people watching.
Oh, my God. Yes.
That's so true. Yeah. So true.
You back up. You're by yourself. You back up and then you just nail it first try. And you're like, did anybody see that? Nope. No. But yet you trip and fall or you can't get it together. There's 100 people to see it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, you have a gooseneck trailer, right?
Yes, I do.
And Lisa, do you typically use a gooseneck or a tagalong?
Well, when I was training full time, I had a 9-horse gooseneck that I pulled with a 2-ton.
Holy moly.
Yeah, that was a biggie. And but more recently it's more of just a bumper pull. Yeah. But either way, this is true because the more people who watch, the more nervous you get because you totally want to nail it. You want people to think you know what you're doing and it never works
out.
No,
it doesn't work.
Ever.
Now, we do have a little like a bumper pull, like trailer where I get the hay and man, there's backup cameras. That makes it so easy. That's like cheating.
It is. That is cheating. Yes.
I have a backup camera on my pickup truck now that kind of goes on your license plate. Thanks for my Christmas present. The problem is it got bumped. So now
So it's off.
So it's a little bit off.
Oh no.
So now do I just leave it that way and figure out how to readjust or do I try to readjust it, which requires getting it out of the cab of the truck about 175 different times to adjust the camera. So I've been weighing that. There you go.
Wait for your daddy to come back. Help.
That's a great idea.
Yes.
Perfect.
Yes. But think of all the exercise you're getting in and out of the truck. Think of all the calories that you're burning.
Oh, that is a good point.
Yeah, good point. Yes. So, number two, nobody understands anybody else's instructions to back up. It doesn't matter who's doing the waving, how experienced they are. It doesn't help.
You know what? It's the closest thing you'll come to divorce ever without divorcing. Yep. I'm like, what is wrong with you? Why can't you just say so? He does all these chats. He's like, pilot hand signals.
Yes.
And I'm like, I don't know what that means. Could you just say stop? I'm right here. Just talk. Use your mouth.
See, Chad's a pilot, and so he's got his own set of arm signals, but everybody has their own set of arm signals. So you don't know what anybody means at any given time.
Nope.
Yeah.
I like the helper who halfway through the process goes from pointing which direction you need to make the hitch of your truck go, and then halfway through, all of a sudden they start making circling things with their hand, trying to tell you which way to turn the wheel of the car. It's like, just make up your mind!
You know what I did for my backing up for my gooseneck is, because you can't see where your little ball is from the truck in mine. So I go into the very end of my truck and I look straight down. I put a tiny little like white rock or something that I can see. And I'm like, I don't need anybody. I'll do it myself. Just to save the trouble.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
At least one time in your life, you're going to get distracted partway through hitching up your rig and you're going to drive off with it with the jockey wheel down or the latch unlocked or the doors hanging open. And you're going to do it when there are 150 people looking.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I am such a freak show about that. But I have a tack room door that the tack room just pops open. That sucks.
Me too. I have one of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good construction people.
I'm driving down the interstate and then the tack room window is flapping in the breeze. I'm going, really?
Is there anything worse than somebody waving frantically on the freeway to you than when you're driving a trailer? Oh my God. Like, oh my God, somebody's escaped. You know, like, no, just your tack room door popped open or whatever. But still, there's nothing good that's going to happen from somebody waving. They're not waving to be like, you're awesome. Yeah. Something is wrong.
Well, it could be something as simple as your tail light is out or, you know, whatever. But
nobody would wave because your tail light's out.
It's true.
Oh, I have. It just, yeah. Maybe people are nicer in Tennessee. I don't know. But
they're like, Lisa. You left your blinker on.
Yeah, exactly. But no, recently, because I'm just so anal about you know, making sure everything's so good. And I hooked up our utility trailer to go get hay, I don't know, a couple of months ago. And I got halfway down the driveway and I hear this thunk, 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 thunk. And I'm going, oh no, what happened? And so, I mean, I hadn't hooked the little latch on top of the ball on the hitch.
Oh no.
And I hadn't put the little cotter pin in there to lock it down. And so the safety chains are dragging the trailer down and down the hill.
Rookie mistake.
I know. I know. I was so embarrassed. But you know what? There was nobody there to watch. So it was so good.
You got lucky. You got lucky.
I shouldn't have said anything. I shouldn't have said anything.
It's out there now, Waisaki. You're in trouble.
I know.
Now, alternatively, you're going to get distracted halfway through unhitching your trailer. And you're going to leave the brake plug in or the chains on. Yeah. Have you ever done that, pulled away with the safety chain still on?
No, but I've pulled away with the electrical thing. And when I was showing, I often hooked up the trailer lights into the truck so I could go into the front of the big trailer and have power. And, of course, one time I just drove right away. I didn't unhook the whole thing. I stripped all the wires off the trailer. And here I am. You know, I've got 9 horses, and I was in Walla Walla, Washington, and I had to get to, I guess, Salem, Oregon, like, the next day. And, you know, who are you going to find to rewire your whole trailer on a Sunday afternoon? Yeah.
No, that sounds terrible.
I know somebody. I won't mention their name.
Glenn.
They had a gooseneck. And they unhitched it, took the chains off, unplugged it. Everything's cool. Forgot to put the tailgate down. Drove away.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah.
True that.
I feel like I just saw that on Facebook like a week ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it's more common than listeners. I only ever heard of this one occurrence, but it does happen apparently. Yeah.
Oh, it does. I think a lot of people will just take the tailgate off because you don't have to, one less thing to worry about.
Yeah. And then the other one is, depending upon the configuration of your truck and your gooseneck, is after you've hitched it up, you have to put the tailgate back up before you pull out and turn a corner. Otherwise.
Oh, I've done that too. Yeah. Yeah. Your tailgate starts to look triangular.
It's like tailgate origami.
Yes. Yes.
So I think the lesson there is when hitching or unhitching the trailer, don't distract the person doing it. Just let them focus.
You know what? Conversely, the person who is actually doing it, do not do it while you're talking on your cell phone. I cannot get gas in while I'm on my phone because I put gasoline in my diesel one time because I was talking on the phone. Oh yeah, stupid. And then some things I just have to completely 100% focus on. And those are things that usually involve my vehicle.
Yeah. Oh, take the earbuds out for a minute in Glenn's case. Don't be listening to a podcast while you're hitching a vehicle or mowing the lawn. Yeah. Yeah. Good.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't pay attention to anybody else because everybody's left is your right and nobody knows left from right anyway. And then when you're trying to do it in reverse, it's crazy.
Yeah.
There we go. And of course, we've already brought this one up. The tack room door, which does not latch properly when you're driving down the road and it's flapping in the breeze. Yeah. What is it about tack room doors? Now, does your I'm guessing, Jamie, your tack room door must have the camper style latch on it.
You know what, Jen? You gotta slam that sucker like you have never slammed a door before to get it to actually close.
I don't know why. The trailer's brand spanking freaking new, and when I bought it, you just have to use 2 hands until it gets broken in. So to open it, you have to use 2 hands, and to slam it, I just about have to get a buffalo to run into that sucker, and then it flies open down the interstate anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I, you know what? I think basically what I've learned here is that we're all just lucky to be alive.
This is true. I will tell you, though, I was driving down the road. This has been a couple of years ago, and I was going to look at a horse at a horse farm. And about 2 miles away from this farm, I saw a saddle pad on the side of the road. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. So I stopped and picked it up. And then about another quarter mile down the road, I saw this English girth. I thought, oh, that's interesting. I'm going to pick that up. And I had like five or six pieces of tack, and I get to this horse farm, and the name on the saddle pad matched the name at the horse farm. I thought, oh, I know what happened. I did give it all back to them.
Here's your belongings back. I picked them up on the side of the road. Fantastic. That's great. Well, Lisa, before we wrap this show up, what is happening in the world of Kat Enright?
Oh, so Kat Enright is trail riding. So, and she's trail riding actually with Zeus and Jamie Jennings.
Oh my God.
And they're going to a competitive trail ride here in Tennessee. It's very exciting. And, you know, a couple people have to die. That's kind of the sad thing, but.
Zeus sound. That's all I care about.
Zeus is sound. Yes. But he's causing a little bit of trouble.
Are you serious about this, by the way?
I am very serious.
Oh,
yes.
My God.
Yes, he disrupts the whole campsite in the middle of the night, but, you know, it's okay. It's okay. But it's called the Rain Equation. We're hoping to have it out by the end of the year. And the reason for the delay, I can't get into it a whole lot, but there's a lot of good stuff going on in Kat's world. And, you know, she has her own Facebook page now. It's Kat Enright Mystery Horsewoman, or Kat Enright Mystery Woman. And, so a lot of the characters from the book post on the Facebook page. And so that's been kind of fun.
Oh, neat. Okay. I'm going to go follow it right now.
Yeah. It's fun. So, so anyway, everybody's been asking, but, the new thing is I think this time around, I'll be able to do signed copies if people order. So we've not been able to do that before. So. That'll be fun.
Very cool. Well, put my order in first because I cannot wait to see what my horse has done again.
If you're in the book, you're going to get a copy anyway. So.
Oh. That's cool. Yeah. I'm excited to see what happens. And hashtag damn it, Zeus, hopefully makes an appearance in the. By the way, I did ride him yesterday. He is getting ridden, and I ended up sitting on him for about an hour bareback. I throw a bareback pad on him, and I take him in the field because he's still the most dang fun horse you could possibly ride. I mean, he's trouble on the ground, but, like, he is so fun to ride. And then I went to kickboxing last night, and I was like, why can't I kick? What is wrong with me? Oh, yeah. Hashtag damn it, Zeus.
Yeah. That'll do it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Lisa, for coming on. You're usually Glenn steals you for his co-host, so I'm glad to have you. I appreciate everything, Jen. Great job producing. We appreciate it. And anything you wanna throw in there at the end? Anybody? Lisa, do you have your catchphrase already yet? What would Kat Enright say?
Kat Enright would say, stay alive.
I love it. Hashtag stay alive.
Stay alive.
Stay alive. There you go.
Stay neuter and geld.